Have you ever known you were right? The same way you know exactly what the driver who just cut you off in traffic was thinking and what kind of a person they might be? Welcome to the Unknown Knowns, where intuition meets intelligence tradecraft. I'm Dr. Angela Lewis, and this is a space for people who think for a living, intelligence professionals, leaders, and decision makers navigating complexity, uncertainty, and imperfect information in a fast-paced world. Each week, we'll explore how intuition, bias, and judgment shape the way we make sense of complexity and how to get better at it. Today, we're starting with the foundation. Because long before decisions are made or influence is exercised, something else is already at work, often without our awareness. Bias. Now, if you just felt a little internal flinch, that's normal. Bias has a bit of a branding problem. We tend to talk about it like it's a personal flaw, or worse, like something only other people have. But the reality is, we all do. And for those of us who pride ourselves on intellectual rigor, on striving for objectivity, bias isn't something we can ignore. It's something we have to contend with. So let me pause for a moment and explain what we mean by the title of this podcast, The Unknown Knowns, because it sits right at the heart of this episode. An unknown known is something you know, but don't realize you know. It's the assumption you're operating on without having named. The pattern your experience has trained you to recognize, even if you can't yet explain why. The instinct shaping your judgment before conscious reasoning ever kicks in. In psychology, this shows up in something called the Johari window, named for the psychologists who designed the tool, Joseph Luft and Harrington Ingham. The Johari window is a simple way of saying that there are things we know about ourselves, things others see that we can't, and things influencing us that haven't surfaced yet. Biases tend to live in that third quadrant, the part of our thinking that's active but not yet visible, operating and influencing us before we're even aware of that. And that's why bias isn't always about ignorance. More often, it's about unexamined knowledge, experience-based shortcuts, intuitions, and assumptions that feel obvious precisely because they've never been challenged. That's why simply being aware of bias doesn't solve the problem. Because you can't interrogate what you haven't fully surfaced. This episode is really about learning how to bring those unknown knowns into view, not to eliminate them, but to understand how they're shaping judgment, especially when the stakes are high, because that's when our mental shortcuts stop being harmless and start becoming consequential. Before we go any further, we need to clear up something important. Biases are not always wrong. In fact, most of the time, they're doing exactly what they're designed to do. Biases are cognitive shortcuts, heuristics, that allow us to function in a world that would otherwise overwhelm us. Think about it. You make hundreds, probably thousands of decisions every single day. What to pay attention to, what to ignore, who to trust, how much effort to expend. If you had to analytically reason through every one of those choices, you'd never leave the house. You'd still be standing in the kitchen debating whether toast is a good idea. Bias is what allows us to operate efficiently. It's what lets us recognize patterns, move quickly, and conserve cognitive energy. In that sense, bias isn't a failure of thinking. It's a prerequisite for it. And this is where something like Occam's razor quietly enters the conversation. Attributed to 14th century philosopher William of Ockham, Occam's razor isn't a law of truth, but rather a principle of practical reasoning that says that, all else equal, the simplest explanation is usually the best place to start. That's not because reality is always simple, it very much isn't, but because unnecessary complexity often obscures more than it clarifies. Bias works the same way. It gives us a first-pass explanation, a working model that helps us orient ourselves in uncertainty. And much of the time, that's good enough, but not always. So in short, bias isn't your enemy. Unexamined bias is. Bias tells you what feels intuitive, what your experience has primed you to notice, and where your instincts are strongest. That information is valuable, but only if it's surfaced, tested, and stress-checked. The goal isn't to eliminate bias. The goal is to work with it deliberately. That means asking, why does this explanation feel right? What past experience is influencing me? Where might my confidence be outpacing the evidence? Bias becomes dangerous when it's invisible, but it becomes useful when it's interrogated. This is where psychologist Daniel Kahneman offers a useful frame. He describes two modes of thinking. System one thinking is fast, intuitive, and automatic. It's where bias lives, and most of the time, it serves us well. System two thinking is slower and more effortful. It's what we use to question assumptions, weigh alternatives, and slow ourselves down when the stakes demand it. Bias becomes dangerous when we let system one thinking run the show in situations that actually require system two thinking. And that comes down to stakes. Low stakes decisions, bias can be efficient, even helpful. High stakes decisions, the kind involving risk, uncertainty, people, resources, or long-term consequences, that's where bias deserves scrutiny. The higher the stakes, the more important it becomes to interrogate biases. This is where intelligence professionals and good leaders separate themselves from merely competent ones. Not by eliminating bias, but by interrogating it deliberately when it matters the most. And here's the catch. Even when we know all of this, we still fall for the idea that awareness is enough. I'll be honest. For a long time, I genuinely believed that being smart, trained, and self-aware made me less biased, which, in hindsight, was kind of adorable. Because here's the uncomfortable truth. Bias doesn't disappear when you notice it. It just gets better at hiding. In fact, research consistently shows something counterintuitive. People who believe they are objective are often more vulnerable to bias, not less. Why? Because awareness creates confidence, and confidence lowers our guard. It's the cognitive equivalent of saying, I've done this 100 times, this will only take 20 minutes, right before traffic, interruptions, and reality add another hour. Psychologists call this the planning fallacy, our tendency to underestimate how long something will take because we focus on an ideal version of events. It's a simple and all too familiar example of how confidence itself can introduce a blind spot. But as we've already clarified, bias isn't a bug in human thinking. It's a feature. Our brains have evolved to make fast judgments under uncertainty, not perfect ones under peer review. Bias is how we reduce cognitive load, how we conserve energy, how we move through the world without stopping to deliberate every single decision, which means that bias is always operating, especially when things feel familiar, urgent, or emotionally charged. And those, inconveniently, are the exact conditions under which most real-world decisions get made. Here's where this gets personal for high-performing professionals. Intelligence analysts, executives, experienced leaders. The smarter and more experienced you are, the more dangerous bias can become. Not because you're careless, but because expertise creates pattern confidence. You've seen this before, you recognize the signals, your intuition kicks in. And intuition can be powerful, but it's also where bias likes to set up shop. We often assume bias only shows up as sloppy thinking or ignorance, but more often it shows up as premature certainty, overweighting familiar explanations, discounting disconfirming information, or mistaking coherence for accuracy. In other words, bias feels like confidence, which is why simply telling smart people to watch out for bias doesn't work. You're not ignoring bias, you're reasoning through it. And the human brain is exceptionally good at justifying the conclusions it already prefers. So let's talk about one of the most dangerous biases of all. Not confirmation bias, not availability bias, not even overconfidence. The real culprit is the illusion of objectivity. The belief that you see the world as it is, while others are influenced by ideology, emotion, or blind spots. Psychologists call this the bias blind spot. We are excellent at detecting bias in others and remarkably bad at detecting it in ourselves, which creates a paradox. The people most committed to rationality often underestimate how much their own cognition is shaping their conclusions. And here's the kicker. You can't introspect your way out of this. Bias operates largely below conscious awareness. By the time you notice it, it has already shaped what information you noticed, what you remembered, what you weighted as important, and what you dismissed as noise. So awareness isn't useless, but it's not sufficient. Knowing bias exists is like knowing gravity exists. Helpful, but it doesn't mean you stop falling. Let me ground this with an example almost everyone knows, the Titanic. Because the Titanic didn't sink due to a lack of intelligence or expertise, it sank largely because of bias and ice. The ship was technologically advanced. staffed by experienced professionals, designed by experts who genuinely believed that it was, for all practical purposes, unsinkable. And that belief shaped everything. Ice warnings were received but interpreted as routine. Speed wasn't reduced because nothing felt urgent yet. Lookouts saw ice, but too late to overcome earlier assumptions. This is what bias looks like in the real world. Not ignorance, not incompetence even, but rather things like normalcy bias, the assumption that because something hasn't gone wrong before, it won't go wrong now, overconfidence bias, trusting design and experience more than emergent signals, and confirmation bias, filtering new information through a story we have already emotionally and or professionally invested in. No one on the Titanic thought they were being reckless. They thought they were being reasonable. And that's the danger. Bias doesn't announce itself as bias. It shows up as confidence, precedent, and, quote unquote, this makes sense. By the time reality intervenes, the window to challenge those assumptions is already closing. And yes, before anyone emails me, the internet is probably right. Jack likely could have fit on the door. But that's kind of the point. Once a narrative takes hold, like that there was only room for one, we stop questioning it. We defend it. We build increasingly elaborate justifications around it. That's how bias works. Not by blocking alternatives, but by making them feel unnecessary to consider. And in that way, bias doesn't just shape our decisions. It also shapes the stories we tell ourselves afterward to make those decisions feel inevitable. That's called post hoc rationalization, explaining a choice after the fact in a way that preserves coherence and confidence. And once we've invested in that story, emotionally, cognitively, reputationally, sunk cost fallacy kicks in. We stick with it, not because it's still the best explanation, but because challenging it or changing it would mean admitting that we might have been wrong. At this point, people often ask, so are we just stuck with bias thinking? Well, yes, kind of. The key is that we have to stop treating bias as a moral problem and start thinking about it as a design problem. Bias persists because it's automatic, it's efficient, and it feels right. And most debiasing efforts fail because they rely on the very cognitive system that's already compromised. Telling yourself to be objective is like asking a system to audit itself while it's running. That's not how good controls work. You don't fix bias by trying harder. You fix bias by changing the environment in which judgment happens, which brings us to what actually helps. Let's take a brief detour into Schrödinger's cat. Stay with me here. In the thought experiment, the cat is simultaneously both alive and dead until it is observed. Now, we don't need to stretch the metaphor too far. This isn't quantum mechanics for analysts. It's just a way of describing how our thinking collapses options before we've really examined them. Let me explain. Before we examine our thinking, multiple explanations can coexist. Our bias collapses that uncertainty into a single narrative, often prematurely. The moment we commit to one explanation, it becomes real in our reasoning. We notice confirming signals, we discount alternatives, we organize information around it. In other words, observation changes the system, not because reality changes, but because our cognition does. Bias collapses possibility space. Sometimes it's useful, sometimes it's dangerous. The discipline isn't to avoid collapsing the wave function. You have to decide eventually. The discipline is in knowing when to pause before you do. So here's a reframing that helps keep bias useful without letting it run the show. Treat your bias as a hypothesis generator, not a conclusion. Bias says, here's the most likely explanation based on experience. Good judgment responds, okay, now let's test that. Occam's razor gives you a starting point. Structured thinking, alternative analysis, and explicit assumptions determine whether you stay there. Bias becomes a problem only when it's invisible, it's unquestioned, or it's mistaken for objectivity. When bias is surfaced and examined, it actually accelerates good reasoning. It helps you move faster, but with control. Effective debiasing can be uncomfortable, especially in an environment that asks for speed and certainty. In fact, it can feel an awful lot like friction. This is where structured analytic techniques, SATs, deserve a lot of credit. SATs are excellent at exposing bias. That's not a side benefit. It's literally one of their primary purposes. They force you to slow down, to surface assumptions, to consider alternatives you might otherwise dismiss, to separate evidence from inference. In other words, they're designed to introduce exactly the kind of cognitive friction that challenges biases. And when you have the time to use them properly, they work. But here's the reality. Most high-stakes decisions don't happen in classrooms or workshops. They happen in fast-paced, messy environments. If you're a senior executive, you're making consequential calls between meetings, flights, and unread emails. If you're an intelligence analyst responsible for maintaining awareness across a multinational organization's global footprint, first of all, God bless you, you are constantly trying to separate signal from noise in real time. There isn't always space to sit down and run a full structured technique. That's not a failure of discipline. It's a feature of modern decision making. The problem is that the stakes of these decisions are increasing, even as the time available to think is shrinking. This is why the most effective professionals don't treat SATs as checklists. They treat them as mental scaffolding. The real value of structured techniques isn't just in doing them formally, though that can obviously be exceptionally valuable. It's in embedding their principles into how you think under pressure, asking almost automatically, what assumption am I leaning on? What's the alternative explanation? What would change my mind? Where might I be overconfident? When you internalize those moves, you don't need a whiteboard or a template. You're not running an SAT. You're thinking like someone who already has. That's how bias gets managed in real environments. Not by pretending we always have time, but by designing our thinking so that it degrades gracefully under pressure. Bias thrives in our heads, but it weakens when reasoning is made visible. When you write down assumptions, explain your logic out loud, show how evidence connects to conclusions, you create opportunities for interruption, not because others are smarter, but because they don't share your blind spots. This is why structured analytic techniques work when they're used properly. They don't make you unbiased. They slow you down just enough to notice when thinking gets sloppy. This feeds into another concept, building redundancy into judgment. In high-risk systems, we don't rely on a single sensor. We shouldn't rely on a single mind either. Red teaming, peer review, diverse perspectives, not as performative inclusion, but as cognitive resilience. Bias weakens when different mental models collide. Not because disagreement is fun, but because convergence without challenge can be dangerous. Also, bias loves a single story. One powerful question can destabilize it. That's why it's good to force alternatives. What would have to be true for this explanation to be wrong? Bias loves a single story. One powerful question can destabilize it. What would have to be true for this explanation to be wrong? This isn't about playing devil's advocate for sport. It's about deliberately creating cognitive competition, forcing alternatives, because unchallenged explanations can harden and fast. Also, separating confidence from certainty. This one is subtle but critical. Good analysts and leaders learn to be confident in their reasoning without being certain in their conclusions. This sounds abstract, but it's a skill. It means being explicit about what you know, what you don't, what assumptions matter most, and what would change your mind. This doesn't weaken credibility, it strengthens it, because it signals intellectual honesty and adaptability. Let's make this actionable. Here are three practices that you can use immediately. Number one, name your assumptions. Before you write, brief, or decide, ask, what am I assuming is true here? Number two, identify your disconfirming signal. Ask yourself, what would I expect to see if I'm wrong? And number three, invite friction early. Don't wait until conclusions harden. Ask someone you trust, what am I missing? Not because they're right and you're wrong, but because they see things differently. Structured analytic techniques aren't just tools you pull off the shelf when time allows. They're a way of training your mind to recognize assumptions, surface alternatives, and slow judgment down just enough, even when everything is moving fast. The goal isn't to run a perfect technique every time. The goal is to become fluent enough in the underlying logic that it shows up in how you think under pressure. So, In conclusion, bias doesn't mean you're failing as a thinker. It means you're human. The most effective professionals aren't the ones who claim objectivity. They're the ones who design their thinking to withstand its absence. Because judgment isn't about purity, it's about discipline. And discipline means knowing the mind that you rely on every day is powerful, adaptive, and imperfect. And I'll be honest, this kind of thinking is exhausting. Constantly questioning your own assumptions can feel like swimming upstream, especially now. We are operating in an environment where it's increasingly difficult to know what and who to trust. AI-generated content, deepfakes, bot-driven amplification, and rage baiting all blur the line between signal and noise, and they do it at speed and scale. At the same time, the broader information environment rewards certainty, speed, and outrage far more than nuance, restraint, and intellectual humility. This means clarity matters more than ever. Being explicit about what you think something means, not just what you're seeing. But so does discipline. Clarity without scrutiny becomes overconfidence. Speed without reflection becomes error. So continuing to interrogate our thinking, staying open to valid, disconfirming evidence, even when it complicates the story, isn't just cognitive challenge anymore. It's a professional responsibility. Thanks for listening to The Unknown Knowns. If this episode made you think or rethink, share it with a colleague or friend who's ready to level up their tradecraft. Subscribe for more short, sharp conversations about the art and science of professional judgment. Until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and keep turning intelligence into impact.